That's cool.
Yeah, I got that one off too. Screw you, Jeff. I didn't get the queen off though.
Whoa. She's dead, so.
Oh, Christ.
You know, I should have done that. You know that, like, Jurassic Park? Like,
It's Thursday evening. He shows me his deck today. He's playing D&T. And O2's the lone doomsday. And then he asks me, did I play all right? And I say, McBain, you played wonderful tonight. We go to Tacoma. It's finally PSBG. Two-thirds the podcast. Here for a set X3. And then he asks me, did we play all right? And I say, McBain, we played wonderful tonight.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast. It's rolling a D6, but also we get to roll an additional D6, but actually there's state-based effects and we get to add one to the D6 to open the attraction. And if I've assembled three contractions, I can add a couple stickers. And also all my creature cards have sticker kicker. So when this comes into play, I'll roll an additional dice and add a sticker to all of my creatures in zone 2. I don't think this is affected by Raging River, but we should probably call a judge because I don't have the Oracle text and it's from Unlimited. My name is Quinn Omori, and I'm here as always with my co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going?
Hello from the Gamma Zone.
Hello from the Alpha Zone. We can't block each other. But we have been blocking our fellow co-host, Brendan McBain. For the last, probably, well, that was a good 2 minutes, probably. Brendan, what's up?
Just hanging out passively in the beta zone.
That's right.
Seeding to your alpha, Quinn.
Man, if we were well. like an incel podcast, you would have just told him yourself there. But I digress.
Do you think we could be like the Sig Magic podcast? Do you think that works? Sig Magic?
Is that a thing? I don't know.
Like Sigma male.
Is that good?
It's better. I think it's S tier.
Is it?
Is it?
Yeah.
I can never tell.
Don't make me the like incel expert.
Well, you are. So
I think surprisingly, because I mean, not surprisingly for McBain, because he's on the internet the least for sure, but like I'm on the internet a lot and sometimes Jeff, you'll like say stuff and I'm like, I don't know what this is.
I've definitely pulled into like the dark side of like the Elliot internet more than I should be for my own mental health. It's like, do you ever like look at something that like you know is bad and is bad for you and you're just like more?
No, I learned that someone I know, because I was like, what's this two girls, one cup thing? I'm just going to look it up. And someone I know was like, don't do it. And I was like,
at work.
I was like, how bad could it be? It was not at work. And I'm like, how bad could it be? And
she was just like, you're like 21 or something? Or
yeah. And she was like, just trust me. Don't do it. You don't have to look at everything on the internet. And I was like, okay, like describe it to me. And she's like, I don't want to. And I'm like, does someone get killed? And she's like, I don't think so. I'm like, you don't think so. Anyways, she described it to me. And then I was like, you're right. Thank you. I don't think I need to see that. And then from then on, I've had like, there's just a small part of my brain. I still read like comments and stuff all the time, but I can put the brakes on and be like, I don't think I want to open this image that like Twitter has been like maybe offensive. I'm like, it might just be something stupid, but I bet I don't want to see it. And if I, even if I like don't care about it, I probably like literally don't care about it. So it's just like, I just don't need to look.
That's some good willpower.
Well, I mean, I hear this description and I'm like, wow, I really dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
And that just like set a, like a border in my head.
I just feel like every day on the internet for me is like, do you guys know that Celery Man skit from like Tim and Eric with Paul Rudd?
Yeah,
this is gonna be great because if McBain doesn't know this, I can't even attempt to explain it to him.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's just there's just a moment at the end when he's like on his computer, he goes, "Ah, shit!" Like, I'm okay. Like, that's every time I open my DMs.
Well,
here we are.
It's a lot of shit being thrown around. So let's clean things up. If we have a housekeeping item.
We do. Hot off the presses. Thank you, McBain, for sending this to me and then reminding me that you sent this to me.
No worries.
And of course, shout out to the amazing art on this. So please go look at the event on Facebook if you're interested or you just want to see. Laughing Dragon.
Can you describe the art a little bit? Like, I think it's worthwhile.
It's really like the ad for a retirement home where two people are playing backgammon and like somebody's kind of sneakily showing you like their weighted dice. But then it's replaced with the minotaurs. It's great. It's very nice. So Laughing Dragon's having a Legacy 1K November 5th at 11 a.m. 1175 Northwest Gilman Boulevard in North Issaquah, Washington. As I learned when I was Googling this, I naively thought, north? That's got to be north of Seattle. Why else would it be north? Issaquah is south and east of Seattle, so a bit further for us to get there. But, you know, desperate times for proper legacy events. And here's the question. Are stickers going to be legal by then?
Yes, for
do
sure.
I...
Yeah.
I was going to say, do I care? Like, what? Do you have some master plan here with
We don't know. Stickers? We don't know yet. Like, hopefully I mean, you don't care.
There's a lot of value in making something as shitty as you can. But this is cool. It's a ways out, which is good for trying to plan stuff. But also it's in that like black hole of planning for me right now where like a legacy tournament like this at this size isn't like big enough to like take priority over like real things that might be happening. So for the moment, my calendar is clear aside from this, which I've entered. But, you know, something with a larger gravitational pull might come up by the time we get closer to this event. So I'm tentative.
I might be in San Diego, I think.
God damn.
We're going to visit Liz's friend, but we haven't like picked a date, but I think it's going to might be.
You're going to line it up just so.
Well,
and November 5th sounds nice.
I can't go Thanksgiving weekend and also it'll cost a lot. And then I imagine Halloween. Oh, hell, we can't go to Halloween because Liz's friend has two kids. So they like won't be able to hang out on Halloween night, I imagine.
And, like, yeah, send the kids out.
Come on.
Haven't you read? They're just going to get like fentanyl and then pass out all night.
They'll just touch it, right? And then that's how it just goes through your skin. You're just trying to do your job, serve and protect. You touch a book with fentanyl on it, and then...
I definitely agree on the November 5th date. Jeff, I think it's great that it's well announced and ahead of time. Like, so often it feels as though we went through years of legacy events. Like, hey, what are you doing next weekend? Because we have this giant event happening.
Yeah, please eternal come. Weekend.
You go,
wait,
I'm sorry.
If eternal weekend happens, would it be this weekend?
Traditionally, it would be the week before, I think, right? But who knows? Is it online? Is it in person? It's a mystery.
Is it a thing? Who knows? Wonder if they'll do the triple eternal weekend again, or if it will be like, you know what, we're only going to do, I don't know, North America one, and it's going to be online or something, and then like actually do the other two regionally like they have been or were traditionally doing. Who knows? Who the
I'm gonna pick up my Card Titan phone and see what I can find out.
On June 28th, shout out to at Mayhem MTG has eyes on the fucking prize. Well, Eternal Weekend return in person this year. Trying to map out my vacation time. Card Titan. We don't have any information we can provide at this time. There's been no other information since then.
That sounds about right.
Like, they'll be at least online, right?
Who knows? This time last year, we had Gen Con events going on, which were, you know, qualifiers and all kinds of stuff. I don't think there's been any news about any, like, God accounts or anything coming up. Maybe Daybreak Games or whatever, you know, thinks that's losing business. Who's to say?
Well, I'm going to pencil this one in and try to go. If you need a spot there, Quinn, if you do end up not going down to San Diego, let me know. But I think this is like the third Laughing Dragon event, if I'm not mistaken. The first one was won by Minotaurs, which was amazing. And then there was definitely another one.
There was another one. I feel like there was like some really bad player that split first with a really bad deck, but I can't remember.
Feels like you're daggering someone purposely there.
Yeah, they sponsored Puget Sound Battlegrounds. the other event they had was the one Elliot split with Merfolk.
Ah, yes, thank you.
See, it's been so long, we can't even get our knives in order.
Well, I think that's the only housekeeping we have right now. But traditionally, usually we will do an episode like this, and then the very next day, Card Titan will announce
Eternal Weekend.
Here's Eternal Weekend, blah, blah, blah. So that when we release the episode, it's like we talked about it, but it's now live.
It can't be the weekend before, because that's MTG Vegas. Like the 30th anniversary. Like, there's no way they'll do it the same weekend.
Yeah, but like the whole thing, though, is like, there's not, I'm not going to believe there's planning going into it. Like, it's not WotC doing it, right? So who knows?
Yeah, but they coordinate with WotC for sure.
I'd hope so.
Like, they get the card and stuff. It's like the Legacy Championship.
So black-pilled these days, man. I don't know.
The cards are just like, when you look, when you get like a giant magnifying glass instead of like a jeweler's loop, and you look at the back of the giant card, and it doesn't have the little like red spot in the green circle. They've all been counterfeits.
It's blown this whole thing wide open.
They just got all the giant cards printed off of like some like Chinese factory advertising on Facebook.
So I was just going to ask you, Jeff, what have you been up to? Because I've been traveling around in a desert for the last 2 weeks on vacation and haven't really, I had my phone on like airplane mode for almost all of it. Like, I've really been disconnected. So like, have you been playing Magic? Has there been any crazy stuff that's come out?
I have honestly not. It's been a weird summer for a lot of stuff for me. Gravine's had some, this always sounds dramatic when I say it, and I want to stress it's not dramatic, but she's had some like medical things coming up with been affecting her mobility. So I've been for most of the summer not able to make it to the weeklies because I got to take care of our dog who's doing okay, but not great. So I think in the last like couple months, I've maybe made it to like 2 weeklies. It's been pretty bad. Probably my worst attendance since I started showing up, you know, however many years ago. I did manage to show up maybe 3 weeks ago. I think you were there. So maybe 4 weeks ago. And I played that list from Daniel. Callum. The Pitch Elementals. Mardu do bullshit with the Showdown of the Scalds and like, you know, 4 Griefs, 4 Furies, 4 Solitudes, and just a bunch of Mardu cards. That was fun. The deck was like kind of fucking stupid. But casting Shonen of the Skulls and just like drawing four was sick.
I definitely have a, so I usually during the weeklies, I was there that week and I usually take photos and like put them on the Facebook group or whatever. But I definitely have a photo with you having a Queen Marchesa, a Solitude, a Grief, a, what is it? The Showdown of the Skulls or mm-hmm. whatever, that saga. You had a Fable.
Yep.
Which you had stacked with just one dice representing both lore counters. And then you also had an opposition agent in play and you had an Ephemerate revealed on top of your deck. So clearly things were going well for you that game, but it just, I like wandered by and I was like, what the hell is this?
That was also like, it was crazy the amount of like magic dexterity you lose from not playing magic physically for a while. It was like, I'm trying to move dice for counters and this and that, and this thing's rebounding. This is ticking up. And I was like, I was just over my head. You also got a great picture, I think, of me getting the nut wear tear against James, which is sick. You know, it was nice to be on the giving end of a wear tear for once. but aside from that, you know, I played a bit of Magic Online, some Esper Vial with some of the new cards, just like fuck around and see. Aether Channel is cool. Probably, I mean, definitely not good enough, but it fills that like Blood Mage, whatever, Chaos Blood Mage hole in my heart of just like a card that just does a bunch of shit. So that's cool. And then I ran into like Riddlesmith a bunch of times in a row and like Minskin Boo. And I was like, I'm just kind of done. So I've just been spending all of my arena gold drafting. And honestly, these days right now, I'm not even like having a good time doing that. It's just kind of something that I do. Putting tickets in the machine and hoping I feel better.
real positive vibes here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I'll say about Magic is that like, if you have like nothing else to do, it's still like, unless you're like really invested in a video game, I'm like, I got like shit to do for 20 minutes. I'm like, well, there's one thing, mm-hmm. you know, unless I'm like some articles saved up in open tabs or something. I can't think of like anything else. Even if it's like the worst draft format, I'll be like,
it's like having a little puzzle, right? It's like you sit down and open up your book of Sudoku. It just makes you mad.
For me, the last while, that little Sudoku puzzle has been Slate of the Spire.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just fire that up and be like, all right. I've been trying to get Ascension 20 done on each of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the stupid... What is it? Silent? What's the rogue one?
Oh, the silent's so good.
Or is it defect? What's the...
Defect's like the mage, the robot guy.
Okay, so then silent. And I'm at like Ascension 19 or something. And yeah, it's frustrating. But
that's sick. I did get into Monster Train a couple weeks ago, which is in the same family of stuff. Deck building, you know, whatever. And that was pretty fun for a while. I don't know. Just trying to find other shit to do.
When you have any clarify, legacy vibes? You had your phone on airplane mode, but did you bring your Switch with you?
Did I?
Yeah.
Did we?
Plead the fifth.
We did. I think I played it like once for like half an hour. One night.
I was going to be much more entertained if you're like, yeah, that's how I got to level 20. I had my phone unplugged.
No, we like honestly didn't have that much like just straight up downtime where you're just reading a book or staring at a screen. It was usually pretty busy. Quinn, are you still, you know, frantically playing as much Legacy on Magic Online as you can?
Yeah, I'm playing every single deck that I own in Magic Online as much as possible.
So none of them, and
as much as legally possible. Yeah, I've been drafting too. I play Historic when I need to split my attention. There's like very few moments where I'm like I really need to like focus on this screen up here. With the deck I'm playing, I'm sure if you play like Control, you got to pay more attention. Limited's fine right now, too.
It is fine.
Limited's like rarely bad now, I would say. So it's like pretty good. And then I
played, what did you play last at Legacy? Because you came out the other week, didn't you?
Yeah, I played Infect with the Red Splash from Mitsukimbu.
Go on.
I feel like you could dial in more. I played two because I wanted to draw it to see what happened.
Right.
But I think Fenris is just down. He's like one and one in the board or two in the board, but he has like one main deck. I played two main deck and one in the board because I wanted to like play the card. Right.
Yeah.
It really puts like weird tension on your draws though, because like there are a lot of times they're all like brainstorm on turn two or something. And then I might play an Inkmoth Nexus or play a fetch land and like I won't play out Glistener Elf because I want to like hold up protection the next turn or like in some kind of other interaction. But I'll like shuffle away lands. And I think it also influenced by the fact that I like wanted to play Mitsukimbu, whether it was like the optimal place or not, because I just wanted to see what happened when I like played it. So that,
yeah, sure.
That's like a bias that I introduced on purpose. But there's just like a lot of weird things where I like normally I'd be like, oh, I'll just like operate off of like two lands and a Noble Hierarch. And I'm like, like I don't want to kind of fetch land because I might have to get Volcanic Island, but I don't want to expose to Wasteland. And like, I want like my fourth land drop or whatever. So it was like.
So how about once it got into play?
Oh, it's insane. But I think the argument there is like, why would you play Infect then? Which are the exact kind of cards I fucking hate.
Because you can make your hamster enormous, clearly.
Yeah, and there is like, though I had like an insane play against Tristan O'Loughlin where I like, we fought over Mitsukimbu resolved. I made the hamster and then like invigorated it immediately and then like chucked it at him and then drew five cards. Oh no, I chucked it at whatever creature he had and drew five cards. And that was the game.
Because it still lives, right? Like now it's at one counter.
Yeah, the Mitsukimbu.
And you just drew five cards.
I drew five cards. Like, that's insane. And make another hamster. But then the game was just over.
Exactly. But like the fact that you can.
That's not fun. Like I played Mitsukimbu. He Force of Will. I Force of Will. Mitsukimbu resolved. I had one card in hand, which was Invigorate. And I was like, well, he clearly doesn't have removal. Because he's tapped out and he just like Force of Will. So I was like. And he didn't have a counter spell, or he would have countered. So I'm like, invigorate the hamster, fling it at your dude. The board's clear. I have a Mitsukimbu and I drew five cards. He's like, I guess I'll scoop. I'm like, that was shitty. I think my problem is I care less about winning. Like when you're online, people are like, this card's incredible. I'm like, no, it's powerful.
Yeah.
The card's not fun. Like the games where I, only game where I played it where I lost is that like, my opponent just ripped like removal spell. Something else happened that was like a 2-for-1. And it was like, I think it was like a little unlucky. But also like I wasn't complaining because I'm like, oh, this card's egregious. Like I didn't feel, you know, even when you played like Miracles back in the day, even though like probably wasn't true, you just thought you felt you were smart and you're wrong. But you're like fucking spinning top and you like play predict and you're like, ha, island idiot, draw two cards. Like, oh, Snapcaster Mage, block your guy, also like swords your other dude. Like you're just like doing shit and you're like, fuck, I'm so good at Magic. And again, I'm sure that's inflated by the fact that you're winning, but now I was like just as I finished and I was like, yeah, sorry, that's kind of sick, but like it'd be cool to like play meaningful turns of Magic after like one thing happened. Like, and I play Show and Tell, so I get it's like kind of like that, but it's I only need to have one card in my hand instead of like setting up a combo and having it being like, oh, maybe I Show and Tell, and then you put in fucking Reclamation Sage or something.
You know, Quinn, I think you just need to start playing Blue Red Delver for a bit.
I thought about that. This is what we're saying. This is how bad it's got. I looked at it, I'm like, well, I play a lot of turns.
You play turns?
I don't have
you
to
interact.
Like, yeah.
There's nothing that's like you just auto win. Like you're like, oh, here's my Merc Tide. But like, you know, there's still like, oh, I hope they don't have the swords or whatever. Like there's,
I think even that everything. Though, like if it was like still, and then there are some, when you've seen deck lists with like Stifle Days and stuff, but like the same thing. It's like, oh, I played a Murktide. You're like, I have a Red Blast and I have Force Backup and I play my own Murktide. You know, like it's just like this, like, ah.
I don't know. It seems
inelegant.
So the last two, well, do what I did. So I obviously didn't play the last 2 weeks because I was traveling, but the 2 weeks prior to that, I played Blue Red Delver. And as I mentioned, I only have three Murktides. So you're already kind of
like
tuning down. And I just played another Brazen Borrower and I had a lot of fun. Like it was, I got to cast Expulsive Iteration in paper for the first time and like go to like my alpha, beta, and gamma zones and like which one goes where. All around. I don't know. I had a lot of time. Fun.
Minsky was a powerful magic card. If you want to win games of magic, it's a card that you might want to consider putting in your deck if you're not stretching your mana too far. But yeah, I don't know. It was like, yeah, especially because you fight over things now and then they just, if they resolve, you're like, oh, I guess that's it. It's like, it's sort of like worse than Teferi. Teferi is more miserable, but it's worse than Teferi. And Teferi is bad because it's a lock piece that either like affects the board, draws you a card, or if it's like the only thing around, you just like plus it and you're like, whatever, I have this lock piece and I have a handful of force wills or whatever. It kind of felt like that. You're like, the thing that mattered became that.
Yeah.
And all I had to do to set up was play lands and not get wastelanded.
Well, I still recommend you play some Delver. You can even play some like, you know, bad Delver, some other Delver variant that's not just copy pasta Blue Red Delver, good stuff. Well,
I mean, you can play anything.
You know, I know, but just in terms of like playing some engaging magic where you get more turns, more things matter, you get to sculpt a game plan, you get to execute. I don't know. I think then
what if?
Okay.
Instead of that.
I'm with you.
You know, when you're thinking like, man, I just slammed this like powerful one card and it won the game, but I don't want to win the game all the time. I want there to be some counterplay. So what if we just threw some dice on it? Which leads us, I think, into our next topic. Unfinity spoilers are out. There are, there's a lot of cards. They're not silver border this time around. And there will be some cards in the set that are legal in Eternal formats, which means Commander, Legacy, and Vintage. And the card that I'm referring to is Planeswalker for 2 red and white, Comet, Stellar Pup. It's like Laika into space. Comes in with 5 loyalty and has 4 Planeswalker abilities, but only really has 1 Planeswalker ability. It's a 0, and you roll a 6-sided die. Before we go through the modes, McBain, general thoughts on this concept?
Just like the Randotron dog, like it just does something.
Yeah.
I just read that it actually makes squirrel tokens. I wasn't sure what tokens it made, but the fact that they're squirrels is actually kind of fun.
I mean, the flavor is always good in unsets, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Largely because Hank loves chasing squirrels. So the fact that you've got hasted squirrels for the dog to chase is great. I generally don't like it because it's kind of like in the same vein of what do you call those cards? Like the browbeat cards where it's like your opponent gets to choose. Punisher cards. Is that they're called? The mechanic? It's kind of like that where it's just like you don't have control over it. And therefore the whole like, oh, well, when I play it, am I ahead? Is it good? Am I behind? Is it good? Am I on par? Is it good? Like you just, it makes it all weird. And it removes in some ways the competitive aspect to it for me, like in terms of making it ever competitive. And then before reading any of the abilities, then I would have to say, if you wanted to make it a little bit more competitive, then you'd have to really ratchet up a bunch of the effects on it. And then you're just making this like egregiously spiky card that could randomly just be insane. What do the abilities do, Quinn?
So if you roll a one or a two, you plus two, then create 2/1/1 green squirrel creature tokens. They gain haste till end of turn. If you roll a three exactly, you minus two, then return a card with mana value two or less from your graveyard to your hand. It's any card, not just a permanent. If you roll a four or a five, Comet the Stellar Pup deals damage equal to the number of loyalty counters on him to a creature or a player, then you minus two. So if you roll that on your first go round, you get to five something. And six is plus one. You may activate Comet Stellar Pup's loyalty ability two more times this turn.
Wow. So you could actually go like six.
Technically, you could kill
a bunch of times. Yeah, you could go six a bunch of times and then like it pluses and then you just like it's you flame tongue them for a whole bunch when.
Yeah, conceivably you could go 6-5-1, 6-5-1 over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Or 6-4-1 or 6-4-2 or 6-5-2. And you could kill someone. But I mean, like, not super feasible. But it will happen at a table somewhere, I imagine. If enough magic is played.
Theoretically. But
he's talking about Jeff to catch up because he stepped away. Conceivably, you can kill someone with Comet on the turn it comes into play.
This is a non-zero chance that Comet is a one-shot kill.
Yeah, good lord. So you just keep rolling sixes and then fours or whatever, right?
You've got a 6-4 and then you have to plus it, so you have to roll a two in between. So it's a pretty specific sequence, but you can like run it.
No, you get those guys where you can re-roll a dice.
No, you always have to go.
Oh, you have to go 6-5-6-1, 6-5-6-1.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You always have to have a six in there because you got to keep going.
It's so fucked up. Also, somebody pointed out that the four and five don't target. So you can get around, protection or whatever.
If this was like 4 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, fuck you, Trium Nemesis.
Mirror Merfolk Rogue, I play my space dog and yeah. I rolled a four, get owned.
Yeah. Now, though, I think about Trium Nemesis, I'm like, oh, my old friend. We didn't know what we had.
Doesn't it not kill True Name because it doesn't take damage?
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't take damage. You're right. Doesn't matter if it targets or not. Never mind.
Oh, true. True Just Name like hexproof forever. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Sure. So let's go over the next card and then I want to talk about some stuff.
The next card is Space Balerion, Legacy Planeswalker Jace. Little pun for y'all. 2W. He looks like that's a Toy Story guy.
Buzz Lightyear.
He kind of looks like Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
The altered is fine.
Oh, who just... Whoa, what the hell?
I'm just expanding it. I wanted to see.
Having been deleted it, that would be a plus.
You know, you can zoom on in your browser, right? Anyways. No one can see what's happening now. They're like, what the fuck are they talking about? Anyways. Jace has an ability, Space Sculptor. Space Balerion divides the battlefield into alpha, beta, and gamma sections. We've already determined the McBain's in the beta section, but otherwise you can assign creatures. So if a creature isn't assigned to a sector, its controller assigns it to one. Opponents assign first. So they choose, then you choose.
Well, so
relevant. Sorry.
So I have questions immediately in like, do you choose one at a time? Like you choose, then I choose, then you choose, then I choose, or do you choose where all of your stuff goes and then I choose where all my stuff goes?
I read that as I choose where all my stuff goes and you choose where all my stuff goes.
And then after Jace leaves, is there perhaps any reason you still have to know what zone these creatures are in?
You do, I imagine, because it says if a creature isn't assigned to a sector, its controller assigns it to one, which
unless
leads to me, like keeping track of day and night, you got to know because it comes back into play. You don't get to reassign. It's still in the McBain's still in the beta quadrant.
God damn it. If your creature isn't assigned to a sector. So my only question would be, do you not space sculptor again when the new Jace comes in? And you like redivide and reassign. No,
it reads like right?
Because they're already assigned to a sector. It's a controller assigns it to one. So my belief is that you do not. Or if I play one and then you play one, they're stuck.
Wow. Incredible.
Do you think there'll be like a wormhole card that you can go between the beta and the gamma quadrants? Well, Star Trek reference for y'all.
So the plus one, so it comes in with three loyalty. So you've divided up the board. And I read it as like your opponent says, okay, I'm going to put these two in this one and this one and that one and that one. And then you choose all of yours based on what your opponent's done.
And getting to choose... Sorry, go ahead.
And because of that, like you get to take advantage of these abilities.
Yes.
And so your plus one is creatures in each sector can be blocked this turn only by creatures in the same sector. So if they like don't defend a sector, you can like you make your creature unblockable kind of thing.
You have free or make over the
combat math. You can make combat math really weird. It gives me like the Raging River vibes or whatever it is where you're dividing the board into. You can minus one, so go down to two loyalty and put a plus one on each creature in the sector of your choice, which would include your opponents if they've put creatures there. And then you can also minus five and destroy all creatures in the sector of your choice. So you could, you know, if your opponent loads up, you could not load up. So it's kind of like this weird factor fiction vibe in terms of the mind games that are going on. I don't know. It feels like almost like a commander card to it, but I don't know.
The thing about that, and I mean,
it's horrendously unplayable, so I don't really care, but
is it unplayable?
I think it's pretty unplayable.
It's probably as far as Legacy goes, it's unplayable, but like, oh God.
Like, the thing about this, like in Commander, like, is this fun or is it just like super annoying?
Well, there's already super annoying cards in Commander. Like, I don't know what the
problem is. Yeah, and then because they exist in Magic. Like, but if someone played Raging River, I'd be like, fuck, seriously, man?
Yeah, and you can say the same thing when they play their Space Blade.
Like, I built a deck in Commander back when we were like, pretty soon after I started playing Magic again. And I just took all the randomness cards. And I played it like twice. And the first time I was like, that was fun. And the second time I was like, please stop playing this deck. And I was like, oh yeah, this isn't fun anymore. Yeah, it was like Thieves auction and like all this shit like that.
That's the thing with Commanders. It's like, it's a community format and it's self-policing where people are like, if you want to play with us again, don't play that. And you're like, yes, that's fair. I understand.
I think whether or not Commander self-regulating though is different than like, should they have made this card?
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, why? Like,
but I mean, that expands out to this whole fucking set.
So,
and it's like, you know, what's the point of making this black border if Commander is self-regulating as it is? And then what's the point of printing cards that are functionally silver border, but they have partner on them? It's like, I just don't know who this is for. It feels like they tried to make a bold choice and then started backpedaling on every bit of the bold choice they made. And you ended up with something that I don't think anybody wants.
Here is a question. Sorry, McMahon, you go first and all.
My take is they wanted to sell packs.
Yes. And it wasn't enough stop. Just to put, there are fancy shock lens in the set.
And that's exactly my supporting point is like, if you go and look at like the set price of any of the old unsets, they are not worth money at all. Like there's a couple of things you can maybe kind of sort of
open. The first one was worth money until they made so many fancy basic lens that they ruined the price of those basic lens.
Exactly. So like if you have old packs, it's just like, there's not really any other than just like having a fun random time. There's not really ever any kind of like, ooh, maybe I'll hit this thing and it'll be worth a bunch of money. But like, by introducing both dual lands and a couple cards that you can play like legal in formats that might actually retain some residual value. Like, I think you're definitely increasing the amount of packs that are going to be sold.
I was like, my question time. Is like, isn't this like the perfect venue to put like fetch lands in? If they had imprinted so many fucking supplementary sets, they need to like juice Modern Horizons too.
Yeah, well, like, you know, dual lands are dual lands. Like,
sure, sure. But I'm just saying, like, if they want to sell packs, right? Like, they could also have put fetch lands in. And then everyone would be like, cool, fetch lands. And also, this is like fun. I'll draft it. And then I might buy the odd pack and open a Misty Rainforest and be happy, right?
Yeah, basically, they should... Some expedition of some kind where there's just a bunch of sweet cards.
Yeah, and they're like fancy fetches.
Buy the packs, assholes. And you're like, I will begrudgingly have fun. Who knows?
Can you imagine? Recruit
more people to play
unsets. In a vacuum, and it might not be everyone. I think if you're very competitive, it's not fun. But like the last one came out and we drafted, and like it's not really my thing, you know? But I was like, oh, that was really fun. And like if someone was like, hey, I have like a box, do you want to do a draft? And I wasn't doing anything else, I would be like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll like pitch in $25 or whatever it costs, and like I'll split the box and we'll play, and like sounds like a great time.
But and now like, you'll and open now, up a dual land and be like, sweet, this was doubly fun.
It's a fucking godless shrine. And I don't even want to play it in my legacy deck because of the shitty border. Like I want my magic cards to look like magic cards. I think my question is, because clearly the tension is that they want to be able to print cards like this into Commander, which is like fine. Because like you said, Commander is self-regulating. Commander, I mean, it is self-regulating to a point. Now that they have these massive Commander events, it's less self-regulating. Because you end up sitting down with someone and you have to like trust it. Like, my deck's an 8. And then you're like, motherfucker, you stasis locked us on turn 2. And I just paid $10 for this. And I'm like, it was a booster pack of like fucking Dominaria United. But I digress.
My deck is like, a 6 because I roll D6s.
Yeah.
You're like, oh God.
Well, I don't know. My friends say that my deck's not very good, so I don't know. You know, like, but anyways, they're trying to insert cards into Commander, which is their biggest moneymaker. Like, they're not like, we need to put legacy cards in the unset to sell packs, because that does not get people into legacy. And I'm pretty sure they're well aware that most people in legacy are like, fuck this. You know, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn by like assuming that like at least the majority of legacy players are like, we would prefer this to not happen. But the Commander Advisory Committee, or like the Commander Rules Board, or whatever the fuck they're called, were like, oh, we don't want to make the unset cards legal. As a ruthless capitalist, why are you listening to like fucking 5 random judges? Like, they don't control the, like, you own the game. Just be like, these are the rules of Commander. What are people going to do? It's like madness to me. Other than they'll be like some like fucking, they'll lose some goodwill that they've done like constantly over the last 5 years for like fucking 2 weeks before they do something else. Everyone gets pissed off about something else. Like, why are they like, oh, we had to like, we like printed some of them with like a stamp that's a acorn, and some of them with a regular hollow stamp. And so they're legal in Vintage, Legacy, and Commander. Like, just fucking say they're legal in Commander. What's anyone going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You own everything. What are they going to be like? Have a, well, we're going to do a separate rules. Can we like fucking sue them? You own the IP.
So your whole thing is that like, don't cast a wide net if you're targeting Commander, and
yeah, because they're going to
randomly harm Vintage and Legacy. If you're targeting Commander, just say it's targeting Commander, and put a little special Commander stamp on it or something, and say it's an uncard, but it's legal in Commander.
Yeah,
and you can ban list it if you need to.
It's also just funny because if you look at like, you know, cards explicitly made for Commander, because like they're Commander set cards. I mean, there's some legitimately good cards for, I think, the functionality of Magic that came through there. Like Scavenging Ooze was like what originally printed in like a Commander deck. Like, that's a sick card that, you know.
Baleful Strix, Fluster Storm.
Baleful Strix was, that was, yeah, supplementary stuff. But, like, Fluster Storm, Savine's Reclamation. Like, there's a lot of, like, cool cards that exist in, like, a real Magic space that they've created. But somehow they've just, like, turned all the dials to, like, extremely fucking dumb with this.
Like, Maddening Hex. like, hey, we wanted to introduce some variants into Magic. Like, Magic has variants. It's called drawing cards off your fucking deck. Like, yeah, that's so what makes some, the game good.
What's some other variants? It's all good.
It's not, though. Like, you just talked about, like, why this Planeswalker card might be bad, or at least is, like, not great. Because it's introducing additional variants. Like, Magic was so dialed in because, like, sometimes you're like, I didn't draw enough lands and I got wastelanded. Or I kept a two-lander and then I only had 3-mana spells. Or, like, I drew the wrong color. Like, there's just variants built into it, which was, like, you know, I'm sure, like, part of it was accidental, but it was, like, fucking brilliant.
And yeah, like, no, oh, I was being a little facetious.
I know you were too, but...
The only... So, for me, the RNG kind of variants were actually, like, random numbers are being generated, not just flip a coin and it's either one or the other. I think that's always kind of been enshrined into Magic, where it's a little bit more reasonable. But the one of six things or one of 20 things or whatever can happen, I think that's something for software and computers and for things like Hearthstone, and not for something that's intended to be played on the kitchen table or in a competitive event.
I think even like Hearthstone, like, I don't think that's like a good part of Hearthstone.
I think part of the thing that makes it unanimously worse, everybody hates that of Hearthstone. Yeah.
Like, when it's like seek a random card, I'm like, oh, like, I don't want to. Like,
yeah, the only
control over parts of the game.
The only dice I want to roll in a competitive event is like determining the winner.
I thought you just did that by offering your opponent something.
Oh yeah, there's that too. Illegal? We've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know. It also, like, there's been a lot of discourse around this being like, well, like, it's not going to be a big deal because, like, it won't be playable or whatever. And it's like, fine. But I think it's a thing, too, where, like, we just care about this game a lot. And it just, like, sucks. It's not about, like, it's going to ruin Legacy. You know? Like, when somebody's like, it's not going to ruin Legacy, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I like Magic a lot.
Yeah, I think that, like, I think Morrow had said it at one point, but it was like, oh, we, like, when it came to stickers. And he had said, like, oh, we very intentionally made sure they weren't, like, quote unquote, playable. And they were more for just fun. And it's like, well, there was clearly the agenda of, like, thou shall have legal cards in here to sell packs or whatever it is and deal with it. And the designers or whatever just had their marching orders. I think there's definitely some aspect to that, but, and we're just stuck with, like, the Venn diagram of compromises and the middle is just shitty. But that's what we're stuck with.
Yeah. I mean, it is just the way, it really is the way stuff's been, like, going in general. You know, you look at everything from, like, fire design and just kind of the stuff they're doing within the maybe acceptable realm of, like, what Magic cards are and how they operate. And then, you know, the boundaries are getting pushed a bit. I mean, there's a 40K stuff that already, like, came and went in terms of, like, spoilers. And, like, I don't even know what
were any of those Legacy playable.
Maybe
I just went to the PVDH thing and I was like,
oh yeah, okay. He had a couple, right? They were like,
yeah, that was my, that was the extent. But again, like, that was me traveling in a way. So I was like, oh, I just need, like, the, where's the Cole's notes? And it's the PVDH notes.
Yeah. I just like hit a fatigue point with, like, there's been so many, like, over the last however many years have been so many cards, but, like, the 40K spoilers hit in, like, our group chat. And I was like, I can't. Like, don't have the energy to.
Oh, I muted the spoilers channel a long,
dude, like, long time I hate ago. Working. So, like, usually I'm like, yeah, this spoiler happened. Like, let's talk about this card. And I was like, man, I'd fucking rather do work right now than, like, read, like. And they all have that, like, flavor text from the
D&D set, Dungeons and Dragons.
Like,
yeah.
When the first one came out, I was like, fuck, it's so cool. You know, they're doing a D&D set. I'm like, oh, that really got me on board, like, marrying these two, like, IPs together. And now I'm like,
Laser guns,
play blood, like,
yeah, like, really the only 40K stuff I've read was, like, those 7 cards from PBDH, and I was just like, I don't care about the rest. Have a nice day. I literally, and then like every once in a while, some will pop up or something. And I'm like, what is this art? What is this symbol? I'm like, is this like some like for Valhalla symbol? Like, I don't get it. Oh, it's one of these 40K cards. And I just keep going. I don't even read the text.
This is like the ultimate Chad move. Like, Quinn, I no respect for you for seeing stuff on the internet and being like, I don't want to see that. I heard about it. I don't want to see it. But when it comes to spoilers and McVane exercising that, like, that is respectable. Like the...
Well, I think we're in a rough place with Legacy in that, like, and the same thing with like other formats like Commander or Vintage, where just like everything is accessible to you. Like if you were a Pioneer player or something, you're just like, great, I don't care. I don't have to pay attention at all to this or Standard or any of like the new stuff. But poor Legacy players, when Quinn, to your point, it would be great if they just said, these are Commander legal, end of discussion, because we don't want to alienate and piss off a bunch of 30 and 40 year olds who play Legacy and Vintage. And they just like, you're not harming anyone by doing that, and everyone would just say, great, thanks for not putting little action figures in my game that I want to play.
I guess by the same token, thinking about like, I'm like, why don't they just like fire the keg or whatever? I mean, I guess like also by the same like ruthless capitalism token, they probably don't give a shit what we think. Like, yeah. If that was my like MO, I'd also be like, oh, who's the fuck?
Yeah. Like, so at the end of the day, they went through great efforts to try to make these not really playable or entertaining at all. You know, the Jeffs of the world can show up at their tournament with like all of their stickers and attractions and whatever other things on their side and have the joke once. And then everyone says, yeah, don't do that ever again.
Don't you ever fucking come back.
Like, and then that'll be it. And it'll just be like another long list of things that exists within the game that doesn't really ever have any meaning to what we use the game for, but someone might enjoy it.
Hopefully. Did you see this tweet from Phil Wynn today? This was just perfect. It's like, you roll out to the weekly legacy and your first round opponent, when taking my deck out, I fumble and a few cards spill onto my playmat. What do you do? And it's like the companion reminder and energy reserve, the adventure token, poison counter, day, night, monarch tokens, initiative, and the like dungeons, morph manifest, a stack of stickers, and then your fucking contraption or attraction deck. Like, it's crazy. And like, you're right, there probably isn't going to be anything that shows up, but it's just like, don't open that door, because if there's nothing now, there's going to be attractions at like Modern Horizons 4, and it's going to be like, you know, the fucking log flume and the like the Disney sponsored, whatever the hell the Disney card game crossover is.
I mean, we live through the Astrolabe era where I was just like, fuck it, I'm losing percentage points. But like, people who wanted to win Magic games were like, Snow Covered Island. If anything's good enough, it's just going to be like correct for you to like write down 10 more cards on your registration sheet. I'll never do that because I'm so lazy. So I'll never play a Yorion deck either. It's too many cards to write down. But like, they just have to make one fuck up, which, you know, they've historically made many of over the years. And then you just carry around 10 fucking cards where you're like, all right, just putting my attractions out. My plain attractions. You don't know. Might send you into the dungeon after I ride three attractions.
What if like you steal somebody else's creature that causes an attraction?
That too.
You gotta have it on hand, ready to go.
I'll just scoop. I'll switch control of these creatures, so now you must have attractions. You got it, man. You did it.
Yeah, what if they're playing the enchantment where they switch the entire text box of their creature that makes attractions and you're Emrakul?
Yeah, or someone just donates one of those cards to me. It's better than illusions. I'll just be like, fuck, you got me.
Here's a question for you, maybe never had to consider. Is a power and toughness part of a creature's text box?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
I don't know why I'm so sure about that, but like, I don't think so. I was, when I saw that card, though, Exchange of words
is one and two blue. It's an enchantment. And when it enters the battlefield, choose two target creatures. For as long as it's in play, their text boxes are exchanged on those creatures.
Like, this isn't good, but immediately I was like, I can play Murktide Regent in Infect. And then I can like make my Murktide, I can give my Murktide Infect and get my Glycerin off flying.
Like target two of your own creatures?
Yeah, both of which seem fucking awesome. Like I have a 6/6 Infector and then I have a flying Glycerin Elf.
You know, you could just play, there's like an enchantment that gives something Infect. You could just play
it. I'd give a sticker that gives something. The Glycerin Elf would lose Infect though, right? No, okay, it's not good. I was thinking I would give Glycerin Elf Evasion and then give Murktide Infect, but that's not how it's going to work.
Just use the stickers.
It wasn't good anyways, but...
Yeah, use the stickers. Easier. Infect is on one of them, right?
Oh yeah. My god, is it?
Yeah.
I'm gonna give the hamster Infect. We fucking broke the format, boys.
Does the hamster do the damage or does Minsk and Boo do the damage?
Well, the hamster can attack. And it's
no, I know, but like could you attack and then fling the hamster?
Oh, I don't.
I think it must be Minsk and Boo that does the damage, right?
Yeah, because it wouldn't work because if the hamster did the damage, it'd be dead, right? It wouldn't do any damage, right?
Last known information, baby.
Minskin Boo deals X damage. What if you put the sticker on Minskin Boo?
True. What can stickers go on? God, I did see in the stickers today, there's the name sticker to go with Wizards of the Blank. And there's guacamole. So, you know, you have a guacamole eye diamond. I'm fucking tired, man.
I think that's the thing. It's just like, I don't know, man. I just want to play Magic. Like, not even as I remember it, because that's like, someone's like, why don't you play old school? I'm like, I actually like a lot of new cards. They used to be like better at it, though.
I will say, every time I go back and play old school, I'm like, this is fantastic. Or even just like pre-modern or any of those old formats without planeswalkers and stuff, you're just like, oh, this feels good.
I got to show somebody Spitting Slug today and they went, oh.
I played a little bit of Standard. Sorry, just thinking about when you were saying a time with no planeswalkers, and this is how like far things have come. That someone played a Liliana against me. I was like, oh, this is quaint. Yeah. Okay. We'll both discard. All right. Like, so fair. Like, ooh, you got me. I only had one creature. You got me with Liliana.
I think we are like unanimous in that Liliana is the best ever planeswalker.
Yeah. My
favorite?
Like, just like sweet so spot, right?
Perfectly designed in so many ways.
I think so. It even comes complete with a confusing ultimate where people will frequently make the wrong choice. Get some extra value.
It's a Johnny Vengeance.
Johnny was up there for sure.
This is actually a great question. Like, what's the best planeswalker of all time?
From like the sweetest.
Not like most powerful, but like where you're like, it's good Magic.
I did. Playing the Johnny.
It's got to be Liliana.
It has to be.
Like, you both have to discard. Like, you actually have to build your deck and, like, think about it.
Or you're just behind and you're like, whatever, play my card, discard zero cards.
Plus one. Which is also like, you know, when you're like, man, my opponent's just emptying their hand out. Like, what the hell? And then, like, Liliana, you're like, oh no. Like, they have like five creatures protecting her and they make you discard a card. And you're like, oh.
I still just remember like round one GPC Tech, like 2015, walking around by my buddy Liam, who's playing Rug Delver, and he has like a Nimble Mongoose in play, and his opponent goes like, Liliana, down, take target you, and he stifles it. His opponent was like, oh, okay, so she's still like at three, and he's like, oh no, the minus is a cost. Yeah. Like, she's the one, and this goose is just getting in there, scratching at the door.
I'll play Blighted Agent, pass. I'll play Liliana, make you sack. Like, I'll fetch in response. I'll sack Dryad Arbor. Oh, dried Arbor, too pure for this world.
It's, died. It's so good.
Died for our sins.
Yeah. Do we have anything else to say? I know it's a bit of a rambly episode, and we just got kind of unanimously complain a bunch, which is rare.
We're trying a new formula.
Yeah. It's the alpha, beta, gamma formula. And I think we just jump into That's Gas.
Oh, wow. I've been so negative. What do I like
right I now? Know. This is also like whatever.
Well, Jeff, why don't you start us off?
Sure. This is kind of a half apology, That's Gas, which I guess is the reason. After our last episode, so for one, first apology, that was like what, a month and a half ago, if not somewhere around there. Mountain Pass, I know, reached out because he wanted to know if we had the Tainted Pack list from the Harry Wong. I promised I would get this deck list, and I since reached out to the event organizers, and they said we didn't keep any deck lists because it was an open deck list top eight. So at the moment, it's lost to the ether. I will recover this for you somehow. But in the midst of our chat, he was talking about how we, and this is a badge of honor, are the only Magic podcast that his girlfriend will approve of him listening to in the car with her, which is a big win for us. That's a
huge compliment.
Yeah, I think that's like the highest compliment.
Because like I would put our podcast pretty low on the Magic podcast I listen to personally. So yeah. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. So I made a note that I would shout out his girlfriend if they get this far. So shout out to Mountain Pass, I know his girlfriend.
Nice. It feels like the ultimate Venn diagram of like listenability. It's like Magic content, good vibes, and like girlfriend appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems we've struck a good balance. Quinn, how about yourself?
You go first. Sorry, I just got to think about it.
Oh, well, I'm going to shout out something random as always. So I went as I kind of alluded to. I went on my vacation for 2 weeks, which 2 weeks vacation was like the first time in a long time that I've actually taken a full 2 weeks. Like years and years. Like I almost want to say over 10 years. But that might be stretching it. Like it's been a while since I had a solid 2 weeks off from work. And That's Gas. I gotta say, it was like when years ago we did like an actual, I think it was like 4 months of vacation travel where you're actually just kind of like unplugged doing things. There's not really a plan. It's just whatever comes up and you're kind of just moving. And I have to say, like, I really loved that style of travel. And when I had to go into more of like the corporate, here's your 1 week kind of make a go of it, go somewhere. And you're just kind of moving with the cattle herd and you're trying to min max everything because you only have so much time. I really freaking hated that. And I felt like the 2 weeks was like just enough to like not have to min-max all the time, and you get to kind of iterate and just go where the interesting stuff takes you, and you don't have to have everything planned out like a World War II general or something. Like it was just, it felt good and I really enjoyed it. And it just made me thankful that I like saved up a bunch of my vacation and I took it in a chunk and was able to do that, and it was really nice. So Miss Gas.
I'm gonna That's Gas Olympia, Washington. A place I went to go see a concert that was originally supposed to take place on March 13th, 2020, which was canceled for obvious reasons.
Wow.
On March 7th, I was still like, I don't know, Liz, I think I'm just gonna go to the show. She's like, I don't think we should go to the show. She's like, I'm not going. And I was like, it'll be fine. It'll be like SARS. Like it'll be whatever. And then they canceled like the next day. So they didn't cancel actually. They postponed several times. And so I went to Olympia last weekend. I went to Olympia because I went to see a band called Bikini Kill, and that's where they were formed. And so I was like, I'm going to see them on this reunion tour in their like original hometown, not really knowing anything about Olympia other than that you like fly past it after you like thank the heavens that you've made it past Seattle Tacoma traffic on your way to Portland. And that's pretty much all I knew about it. But great little town. We stayed, it's called the Historic District, which I guess they have like maybe modern downtown, but the historic downtown is like a bunch of little shops, tons of good bars of all types, however you want to wet your whistle, you can do it. There's like dive bars, wine bars, craft beer bars, cocktail places, punk bars, whatever you're looking for. Lots of cool little shops. The farmers market runs like 3 days on the weekend and is like actually really good. They have two great record stores. And at least if you're visiting, if you stay downtown, extremely walkable. We also walked past an apartment that apparently Kurt Cobain lived in for a couple of years, which they're fully taking advantage of because you can rent it on Airbnb. And the we're near there. And I'm like, is that like Kurt Cobain house around here? And then I like look up and I'm like, oh yeah, it's right over there. And on the mailbox, there's a sticker that says Kurt was here. So the spirit of capitalism is also alive, even though it's a pretty like hippie-ish little town. But if you find yourself in that part of Washington, you could do much worse than taking a visit to Olympia.
I'm just going to have to jump in with one little add on to that. This random town that we discovered in our travels, it was actually in the little panhandle of Idaho, going into our geography lesson for the moment. But like that little sliver of Idaho that actually goes up and ties into Canada. And it's kind of sandwiched between Washington and what is that, Montana? But it's the town of Wallace. We were ripping along, heading back home, and like we needed fuel, had to like go for a little like food break or something. And I was like, oh, like this place has like, it sounds like a historic little downtown or something. We like came off the highway. The town was sweet. It had like the weirdest vibes. So all I got to say is just like go wiki Wallace, Idaho, but it had like the sweet brewery. It had awesome vibes and a really interesting, weird history to it. So if you're ever in the area, jump off the I-90 and check out Wallace, Idaho.
Wow, shout out Wallace.
On your way to Olympia.
Like well, you're 9 on the hours away. You go past Issaquah.
You go past Issaquah to complete our geography. And then you head south on the I-5. Interstate 5 being the furthest west because the numbers increase as you go eastward in latitude. Longitude. But anyway. We're getting away from ourselves.
Talking of latitude, I got to explain to somebody horse latitudes in Mississauga last week. I think they absolutely thought I was bullshitting to the point where like I had to double check if I dreamed it up.
And?
No, they had that look that's like eagle parched shock and terror. Like, you know, they're kind of impressed, but also like, I don't know about this guy.
So you started a new job and these are the facts you're like dropping on your new coworkers.
Yeah. I also forgot the specifics. I knew it was like, you know, somebody mentioned trade winds and I said, oh, we're in the horse latitudes. I'm like, what's that? And I'm like, oh God, I have to check.
Just remember the Coriolis effect.
Oh, I forgot about the Coriolis effect.
Yeah. See, it's
classic clear. Mistake.
So the simplest way to think about it is like, because the earth is round and it's spinning.
Hang on, let me get a pen.
Yeah. Okay. And you like naturally you would think like things would go up, keep scribbling on the like a Stan commercial or a Stan music video.
Yeah.
You would think like things from the equator would just spin all the way up to the poles. But because it's spinning and because it's a sphere, you get into this weird thing where there's three zones.
Yeah, the alpha, beta, and the gamma.
There we go. Thank you. Until next time.
We'll see y'all in two thresholds, maybe four. Who's to say? Who's to say? We're actually going to roll a D6. And so we'll see you sometime between 1 and 6 weeks. Thank you for listening. Oh, Venza. Ooh, Venza.